come today as one not who comes to you, but as one who comes from you. You are my roots.
That's Mike Huckabee talking at the Values Voters Summit debate last night in Orlando, Florida. Mike Huckabee, people are listening to what he has to say, and they're saying, wow, he seems to be ideally suited for the values voter, for the conservative voter, the Christian conservative voter. But he's actually polling fairly well in Iowa, but in these debates, he's an also-ran next to Giuliani, Thompson, Mitt Romney. When the Family Research Council got their people together in Washington over the weekend and invited some of the GOP hopefuls there, Romney was the one who won the straw poll that they took. Now, this is unscientific, but straw polls are straw polls, I guess. We're going to talk about this weekend's Values Voter Conference and a little bit of the debate last night and the GOP contenders, Mitt Romney and his faith, his switch on life, and his views on gay marriage, religion, and politics here in the last hour of Issues, etc. It's audio open lines. That means you can give us a call with a question or a comment. If you saw the debate, and I do, this is the cynic in me, when you have this many people running and this many debates, almost weekly debates, on both sides of the aisle, people eventually stop watching and start doing something else. But if you saw it, I'd like your impressions. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address this Monday, the 22nd of October, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We start with a National Public Radio story on last night's GOP debate.
Washington is bursting at the seams this weekend with Republican presidential candidates. They've come to court some of the core voters of the Republican Party, Christian conservatives. They're in town for the Family Research Council's conference for so-called values voters. The halls of the Washington Hilton are buzzing with activity. Pastors, college students, men and women from all over the country stream into the giant Walmart-sized ballroom. It's festooned with American flags and dazzling blue stars of light projected on the ceiling. It's here that a succession of Republican politicians have come this weekend, each trying to convince this essential subgroup of the party that he is the candidate that represents Christian values. There was Arizona Senator John McCain.
My friends, if America stands for anything, it stands for the freedom to follow our own hearts, to determine our own relationship with God.
I know what I would do the first hour that I was president.
Fred Thompson, the former senator from Tennessee.
I would go into the Oval Office and close the door and pray for the wisdom to know what was right.
There was former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, a pastor and a favorite among social conservatives.
I come today as one not who comes to you, but as one who comes from you. You are my roots.
Also, Kansas Senator Sam Brownback spoke here, and he might have been a natural for the nomination, an unbending, unquestionable conservative. But his appeal never really grew beyond his home state. And so yesterday, he became the first casualty of the Republican nomination process when he pulled out of the race. The one man who has gained widespread national appeal is
Rudy Giuliani.
The former mayor of New York. In national polls, he's far ahead of other Republican candidates. He's widely respected in the party for leading New York City in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, and he's credited by many Republicans for reducing crime and taxes in the city. But when it comes to the social conservatives at this conference, Giuliani's got a big problem: abortion. Here's what he says.
People of good conscience come to different conclusions about whether abortions should be legal in some circumstances.
That, in political speak, amounts to being pro-abortion rights, at least in some circumstances. Unacceptable to the attenders of this conference. But Giuliani goes on.
But you and I believe almost all Americans, share the same goal: a country without abortion.
Giuliani is trying to convince conservatives that he has much more in common with them than he has differences. And to further apply a salve to the wound of being pro-choice in these voters' eyes, Giuliani speaks in the code of the pro-life movement.
No set of decisions the next president makes will be more important than the judges that that president appoints.
Now, Giuliani's been saying this for months now, ever since he got into the race. personally opposed but publicly in favor of abortion, and the bone that he likes to throw the values voter is, but don't worry, even though I haven't and I will not withdraw my support for not only abortion on demand, but in some cases public funding, federal funding of abortion. He says it's a constitutional right, and constitutional rights should be supported by federal funds. He'll appoint judges that will reduce the number of abortions, eliminate abortion from society. I don't know how that's going to happen. All judges can do, all the Supreme Court can do, is overturn Roe v. Wade, and then in subsequent challenges to abortion laws, uphold the right to life of the unborn. But he says he'll appoint those kind of judges. Now, is that enough for you? If you were in that group of values voter that met in Washington, D.C., and you heard Rudolph Giuliani say this, you look at the way he's polling nationally, you consider his possible opposition, would it be enough? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're listening to a National Public Radio story about the values voter and the candidate's attempts to win their hearts.
I would appoint Supreme Court justices in the mold of Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, or Chief Justice Roberts.
Strict constructionist judges, Giuliani says, and it may have won him some supporters, like Mark Williamson of Houston, Texas.
If he's telling the truth about appointing strict constructionist judges, I don't have a problem with that. I think, in a sense, Giuliani is the Republicans' worst-case scenario, but our worst-case scenario is far ahead of the Democrats' best-case scenario.
Then again, Giuliani didn't change the mind of Joyce Zunis of Denver, Colorado.
Most people did not care for him until September 11th happened, and then he became a hero, rightly so. But I don't think that qualifies him to run our country.
Another candidate who's working up a sweat this weekend trying to appeal to these voters is
Governor Mitt Romney.
The music plays, the crowd applauds, but the former governor of Massachusetts has his own set of problems with this crowd. For one thing, many say, Romney has shifted his positions on several key issues, like abortion and discrimination against gay people. Some conservatives even pull out a phrase coined for their arch enemy in the last presidential election season. They call Romney a flip-flopper. But even that isn't the biggest problem Romney faces when he looks out at this crowd. It is his faith.
By the way, I imagine that one or two of you may have heard that I'm Mormon. I understand that some people think that they couldn't support someone of my faith, but I think that's just because they've listened to Harry Reid.
All joking about the Senate Democratic leader aside, Romney's religion does pose a problem for Christian conservatives that might otherwise identify with him. Some evangelical churches consider Mormonism a cult. So more than anything, Romney's message to these voters is, I'm just like you.
Now, Romney's changed his approach here just a little bit. Have you noticed this? It used to be, and he said this for about 6 months, the American people want a man of faith or a person of faith in the White House. They don't particularly care what kind of faith that is, what brand of faith it is. And if they look at my life, my family, my record, they will see a person who shares their values regardless of what faith they hold to. That was his previous line. Now, there was a kind of a transition period over the last couple of weeks where we were hearing, and you heard some of it during audio open lines in previous programs, the pundits and the talking heads were saying, look, Romney's got to take the bull by the horns, this Mormon thing, and he's got to start talking about it and stop avoiding it in the minds of people. And so now he'll open with a line like some of you might have heard, I'm a Mormon, but it's still, I'm just like you. I'm a Mormon, but still, I'm just like you. I mean, that's taking the bull a little bit more by the horns. At least he's addressing the issue rather than simply reacting to questions about it. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Audio Open Lines, Issues, Etc. this Monday, October the 22nd. We are talking about last night's Values Voter Summit in Orlando, the debate, as they called it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Paul calling from his car. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for the show. Boy, I don't know what I'm going to do this go around. I
I think it might be interesting for Republicans, Christian voters like me for the first time, who are very strongly pro-life, to face a choice where I'm not sure we can be one-issue voters anymore, because if Giuliani gets this nomination, I do not regard him as a pro-life candidate.
No, and certainly not.
You know, I'm wondering, I mean, that's bad, but I was talking to a friend a number of months ago, and we were talking about how we've all grown so accustomed to being one-issue voters. I mean, frankly, for years, I have to admit, I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to any other issue. And, you know, what will we do if we come down to the choice between two candidates who, frankly, are not too far apart on the abortion issue?
So it sounds like you're saying, Paul, that up until this point, those who care most deeply about the life issue when it comes to their vote in presidential elections have had the convenience of being single-issue voters.
Well, I have to admit, I know that might be an oversimplification, but in my case, that has been exactly what's happened. I have hardly to give it a second thought. I just vote for the man I know will represent my concerns for pro-life. So I'm not sure if I'm going to have that luxury this next time around.
That's some great thoughts. Thank you very much, Paul, and thanks for listening. He's right. I mean, up to this point, without exception, although there have been some shades of how pro-life the presidential nominees have been, those who are pro-life voters haven't had that decision to make. The only exception I can really think of is the first Bush presidency. And I think he was still well within the mainstream of kind of the Republican thoughts on life. The first Bush presidency, he was pro-life, with some notable exceptions. Which, if you poll the American people, that's about where they are and were, too. Not that I agree with it, but that's where they were. So the first Bush was pro-life with some notable exceptions, and who knows where he would have stood on issues like stem cell research and the other life issues. He wasn't around in the White House when those issues came to the fore. But now there's a real possibility we'll be looking at Rudolph Giuliani as a candidate after the primaries are all said and done. And he is not pro-life, even though he says he's pro-life. He's pro-life in the same way John Kerry said he was pro-life. So voters like me, voters like Paul, have a dilemma to deal with when it comes November 2008. And that is, what do you do? Do you choose the lesser of two evils? That is, an openly pro-choice Democrat, along with all the other baggage that comes along, who will never appoint judges in the likes of those who would even consider overturning Roe v. Wade, who may shape, with three possible absences from the court coming up in the next 10 years or so, who may shape the future of the Supreme Court for decades, 20, 30 years, if the justices are young enough? Or do you say, well, I'm going to gamble on Rudolph Giuliani's promise to appoint a court that would be more likely to take a critical look at Roe than less likely? You framed it well, Paul. Thank you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's more from National Public Radio on the values voters and their candidates.
So many people of faith have come to endorse my candidacy and my message.
So, did Romney relieve these conservatives' worries?
I can overcome it because if I think about theological problems with any of them, there's not any of them particularly that are perfect, that's for sure.
What do you think about Mitt Romney?
He's an impressive man. I think I have some questions of faith.
So the theological question is big?
I think the theological question is big for me.
Gary McHale of Scottsdale, Arizona, and Ron Meeks of Cincinnati, Ohio. After all the speeches, all the appeals on family values, it does not seem that any one candidate managed to capture the support of the majority of voters at this conference. And that's a big problem, says Gary Bauer, the president of the conservative advocacy group American Values. Bauer says splintering the Republican base opens the door to a third political party, and that's bad, he says.
I think most people here understand that a third party would only guarantee the election of a candidate that would be diametrically opposed to everything the attendees at these events, this event, believe in.
You speak for a lot of values voters if Rudy Giuliani is polling, mm-hmm. you know, way ahead of the other Republican candidates,
right.
are conservative value voters actually being pushed to the side of the Republican Party?
No, no, they're not. Look, Rudy Giuliani has 30% of the vote. In a field with seven candidates, 30% puts you in front in first place. But it doesn't mean there's been any shift in the Republican Party. And I believe, you know, before this is over, the field will get down much smaller than this. And I think at that point, Mayor Giuliani's going to have a real battle in his hands.
Late this afternoon, the Family Research Council announced the results of its straw poll of values voters. Mitt Romney narrowly edged out Mike Huckabee for first place, both polling just over 27%. Rudy Giuliani came in second to last, and John McCain was in last place.
All right. Those are the front runners there. It's nice to hear that Huckabee was close to Romney there too, because it's more choices for the voters. We always need more rather than less, as Paul's call a little bit earlier points out. Now, I want to hear from you, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, during audio open lines in this last hour of the program. It's good that we remember that all straw polls, all the polling that's taking place now, but given the very broad field of men and women who are seeking the candidacy of their parties for 2008, turn out to be pluralities, not majorities. When you hear that Hillary Clinton is winning among the candidates, it means that she's winning not with a majority, but with a plurality of the votes, more than anyone else, but not a majority. And the same is true of Rudolph Giuliani. And if politics has taught anybody anything, it's that what a difference a day makes. Anything can change between now and the primaries. Miles is listening in his car. Hi, Miles. Thanks for waiting.
Howdy. A couple of curmudgeonly remarks here. I don't know if you've covered these already in this hour, but number one, I guess I can hardly believe you're debating whether to vote for Giuliani over Hillary. Number two, did you notice on Fox News that Ron Paul has been polling way ahead of the other guys? That's kind of scary. And number three, you know, we voted for Bush kind of hoping for a national theologian, but that didn't turn out too good. So I'll be glad to vote for Romney if he's a candidate. Thanks.
All right, Miles. Thank you very much. Look, Mrs. Clinton is appearing to be the one that's emerging from the pack, just like Giuliani appears to be the one who's emerging from the pack. And I think it's a perfectly legitimate question to say to callers like Paul or to the other values voters, look, you are going to have a choice to make if it comes down to pro-choice Hillary, pro-choice Giuliani. If it comes down to that, I think it's a perfectly legitimate question to ask and to debate, especially given the fact that there are some very prominent social conservatives and evangelical leaders who've said, we might be sitting this one out. We might have to, as a matter of principle. And I'm speaking here particularly about Dr. James Dobson, who said he vowed long ago not to vote for anyone who would in any way support the death of the unborn, and he can't go back on that vow, even if it means the dangers of sitting it out. Bob's calling from his car. Here's Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Very well.
Good. I watched the debate last night. And I was very surprised at the end when they took the poll from people that were texting their votes in, that Ron Paul polled so high. He's got a core constituency, and I'm very afraid for two things. I'm very afraid that he will run a third party, which he would run as libertarian, and that the evangelical Christians, of which I'm one, and I'm a faithful listener to your show, by the way, I'm afraid that many people will stay home because of the pro-life considerations with Giuliani, or they won't support a Mormon. And I believe that two things working hand in hand will literally give the election to the Democrats.
All right, Bob, I think you reflect probably the concerns of many, many, many who are concerned about the life issue, and who are concerned about the possibility of a third party. By the way, Bob, you still there?
I'm sorry?
Are you still there, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. What are your concerns about Ron Paul in particular?
I like what it says about smaller government and taxes, that type of thing, but he's very wrong on the war. He's way out in left field. I'm very concerned for national security if he would be the president.
All right, thank you very much. Well, Christians can agree or disagree about the issues of the war, and you're free to hold your opinion. I just don't know enough about Ron Paul. I get a lot of email about Ron Paul, people saying, you don't talk about Ron Paul. What about Ron Paul? And, well, we talk about those on whom we have information and those who have, to be quite frank with you, a realistic possibility. He's still in the debates, but, you know, Kucinich is still in the Democratic debates, too. And a couple others that everyone kind of acknowledges are, if they have any possibility, they're dark, the darkest of all horses, so dark that you might not even be able to see them at some point.
You know, speaking of, but money is a big issue, and Ron Paul apparently raised like $5 million, I don't know over what period of time, but when we were on vacation 2 weeks ago, that's what regular guests on the show sent me.
Oh, yes.
And people that listen to the show were very impressed with this amount of money that he's raised, making the case that he's a viable candidate.
And he's raising it over the internet, which is interesting. Although, you were going to say something?
It might tie into our conversation earlier today with the Dan Cox from the Pew Forum, of young white evangelicals who aren't real favorable necessarily towards the war in Iraq. And have turned against Bush a little bit, maybe that's part of the Ron Paul's appeal to those young who don't.
Well, let's open it up for the listeners. Those who are enthusiastic about Ron Paul, what are they enthusiastic about Ron Paul? Because we hear from him every day, not necessarily over the air, but certainly via email. We hear from him every day. People saying, "Why aren't you talking more about Ron Paul?" If people like you would talk him up, maybe people would start to pay attention to Ron Paul. The little I've heard of Ron Paul, to me, seems like we are looking at a guy who, although he's running as a Republican at this point, is essentially setting himself up for a third-party candidacy. And everybody knows the math on a third-party candidacy. Everybody knows what that math is, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Really, for those who are enthusiastic about Ron Paul, how is he different from any of the other perennial presidential candidates, the people who always run regardless of whether or not they have a chance? I just heard that Stephen Colbert has decided to announce he's running as both a Republican and a Democrat at the same time, the comedian from Comedy Central. And he's hilarious. He makes more sense than some of the candidates, if you ask me. But no one takes that seriously. It's like when, who is the guy who used to run all the time?
Pat Paulson
used to run all the time. And people said, that's nice, that's cute. Some people took him seriously. How's Ron Paul any different? Tell me. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Going to the last half hour of the program, this break is a good time to call or email us. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. If the election were held tomorrow, who would you be voting for? That's how we need to put it. If the election were held tomorrow, how would your vote come out, given all the possibilities? We'll hear from you after this.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Joe Cox, Associate Professor at Concordia University, Wisconsin, St. Louis Center. At Concordia University, you will find a Christ-centered curriculum that is tailored to the busy students' needs in the 21st century. Meeting only once a week, you can work toward an associate, bachelor, or even a master's program as you complete your college degree.
Concordia University, St. Louis Center, 314-984-8840.
Though most have heard of the sermon entitled, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, how many of you have actually read the entire 12-page sermon? Why has this sermon, once so popular, but now is rarely heard? It's the subject of our next Law and Gospel broadcast as we examine it in more detail.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
Evolution. Why do many Christians accept it?
Answers with Ken Ham, popular Australian speaker and best-selling author and co-founder of the New Creation Museum. Ken, you were on a talk show program when a Christian called and said that he could believe in both evolution and the Bible. How did you respond?
Well, Mark, unfortunately, my experiences have shown me time and time again that probably a majority of Christians, and the majority of pastors, sadly, accept some sort of evolutionary idea and try to add it to the Bible. For example, some say that God could have used evolutionary processes over millions of years to bring about plants and animals, and finally man. Now, this view, called theistic evolution, is actually destructive to the very gospel message itself. Now, I'm not saying that people who believe in theistic evolution are not Christians. Actually, I would say they're being very inconsistent Christians and probably haven't thought through the logical implications of their position. You see, the Bible clearly teaches that when God created Adam and Eve, the world was perfect. There was no death and bloodshed. But because of sin, God brought death as a judgment into the world. Of course, he provided a means by which man could be reconciled to his creator as well. But if you accept evolution, you believe that God used death and bloodshed over millions of years as a way to bring man into existence. This actually destroys the foundations of the gospel.
And are you aware that some people won't even listen to the gospel because they think Christians can't offer answers to questions like, where did Cain get his wife? For the answer to that one, go to our website, answersradio.com.
Dr. Dean Winthy, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the important work of Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief.
It has done a remarkable job of joining acts of mercy to the center of Christian theology, namely Christ and his saving work for us. There in the past has been a tendency to do one or the other, that is, on the one hand, to proclaim the gospel and neglect the very real human needs, or the opposite extreme has been to attend to human needs but not to bring the saving gospel of Christ to bear. And Pastor Harrison and his staff share with us the conviction that these two go hand in hand.
Find LCMS World Relief at our website, issuesetc.org, or call 1-888-930-4438.
Sign on at 7:15. Wake up with inspiration, information, and compelling Christian conversation on The Morning Show on AM 850 KFUO. Hi, this is Paul Clayton. Join me and co-host Diane Summers for everything you need to get going in the morning. Plus, we'll open the phones and register you for one of the four $50 gift certificates that Concordia Publishing House is giving away at their annual warehouse sale on November 3rd. Listen for a chance to call and register on The Morning Show.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Last half hour of the program, audio open lines 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the values voter, and we're talking about the dilemma that faces the voter if perhaps a pro-choice Republican faces a pro-choice Democrat in 2008. Let's go to the phones and see what Adam has to say, calling from his car. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Pastor. I called specifically regarding Rudy Giuliani. And I absolutely would not vote for the Republican candidate if Giuliani does win, for the simple reason that when I look at history, I think nations generally can survive a 4-year or even an 8-year crummy presidency, whatever leadership position the person may be in. But when countries lose their moral compass and they don't have anybody who's standing up and saying, this is wrong and this is right, that's when they collapse. And I have a very real fear that if Giuliani wins, that's going to be kind of the death knell of any sort of a moral high ground that we can take as a nation. If somebody's not standing for life, if some party's not standing for life, then I don't have any hope really that we as a country will be able to regain that or regroup.
All right. Thank you very much, Adam. He's kind of being a realist here. I put it in these terms. If Rudolph Giuliani is the nominee for the Republican Party, just think about this. Nominees shape platforms, and the platform will change. And once you change a platform by way of compromise, it's very difficult to change it back. There are lots of Democrats who would have loved to change the party platform to reflect something even permitting a pro-life view, they can't even get that. So if the Republican platform shifts from a fairly hard line, kind of George Bush 1 pro-life stance, to the Rudolph Giuliani stance, which is, you know, abortion's bad. No one really wants abortion, but if it shifts to that, it's going to be hard to shift it back, won't it?
But, you know, what good is a platform if it's just, in practice, nobody's abiding by but a you platform? Know, same thing as confessions of a church body.
Well, you're right. If no one's abiding by it, and a church bodies that affirm in on paper what they deny in practice, what they affirm in paper is irrelevant. But I would point out this. Whenever someone says, well, I couldn't vote. What if there were a pro-life Democrat? We always talk with the pro-life Democrats. We talk with Democrats for Life. And we always get email from people saying, yeah, but have you read their platform? They might be, you might find an occasional pro-life Democrat, but have you read their platform? That's where the platform comes into play. I said the other day, the greatest stroke of genius the Democrats could put forward in the next presidential race, not this one, is a pro-life Democrat. They could rule American politics for decades if they would, but they won't. They're not bound by their platform. The platform just reflects what they believe when it comes to the life issue. Not all of them, but some of them.
Parker Williamson, who's head of a conservative group within the Presbyterian Church USA, a regular guest on the show, he talks about on paper, the Presbyterian Church USA is still a fairly conservative church body.
Oh, yeah.
But in practice, they're, you know, ordaining homosexuals and women.
Among the most liberal. Yes. But the same is true of the Methodist Church, United Methodist Church, of, in some ways, even the Episcopal Church USA. On paper. The only one that on paper is just completely off in left field is something like the United Church of Christ. But to shift to church bodies for a second, what a church body affirms on paper must be proven in practice. Because the way these things work is what you affirm on paper is often denied in practice, and then what you affirm on paper is just irrelevant. That's just noise, sound, nothing to speak of. Ruth is calling from Dallas. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Todd. Yeah, my stepson is very excited about Ron Paul and is supporting him tremendously. He goes to meetings, et cetera, et cetera. And the people who are loyal to him are very loyal to him. He's a strict constitutionalist, and that's the major reason that I can see that they're so gung-ho about him. And he's against the war because he thinks it's unconstitutional. And against the IRS. So that's about as much as I can tell you, I'm sorry to say, but that's that much I can say.
All right, Ruth, thank you very much. Against the IRS. Do I know of anyone who's for it? That's kind of like being against the devil. Good luck. I mean, not that the IRS is entirely the work of the devil. But what Ron Paul makes, and I've heard him make this case, is that the IRS is unconstitutional and immoral. It never should have been. So, but I hear people who are in favor of this. Now, taxes and the war are issues upon which Christians can freely disagree. Taxes and the war, which is what I've heard the big support for Ron Paul is centered around so far. Anyone else? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Andy in Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
Todd, so many of the candidates have done some flipping and flopping, and even Mrs. Clinton is running ideas out to see how they'll play and then just as quickly sticking them back away again. Your mention of Pat Paulson reminds me of his campaign slogan, and so I think I'll go for Colbert. It's time we had a real comedian in the White House.
Thank you. He's talking about Steve Colbert, who has announced his candidacy this last week as a joke, which is most of what Steve Colbert does. Oh, by the way, Steve Colbert is a Roman Catholic. And if I'm not mistaken, he's pro-life.
And Sunday school teacher.
Oh, yes, a Sunday school teacher. I had forgotten about that. And a heck of a lot smarter than a lot of people standing up in the debates. Okay. Laying aside the Colberts and the Paulsons and the Pauls. What are you going to do if the election were held today? If it were November 2008, right now, flip the calendar forward, how would you vote? 1-800-730-2727-505-7850. Charmaine is calling from her car. Hi, Charmaine.
Hi.
Turn down your radio if you would, Charmaine.
Yeah, I just did.
All right. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is why people are not talking about Mike Huckabee.
All right.
Yeah, I think he would be a pretty strong candidate if he got some support behind him. He would probably be a dark horse candidate. And so that's my comment. I think he's a pretty strong candidate, and he could do very well and actually be nominated.
Thank you very much. Of course, this is former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, and he's a Baptist minister. On the whole issue of life, he's 100% with a pro-life position. On gay marriage, he's 100% with the social conservatives on that. He is very articulate from what I see. And at the Family Research Council gathering in Washington, D.C. this weekend, he was only one percentage point away from Mitt Romney in the straw poll. That put him in second place. And he's polling well in Iowa, too, with a plurality.
We plan on talking about Mike Huckabee tomorrow. We're going to pull an interview from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly, take some excerpts from that, and get people's reaction to Huckabee on tomorrow's show.
Yeah, and it's just going to take some time. It's a very long half-hour interview, and we need to kind of pull out the pertinent things for our audience. That'll be tomorrow on Issues Etc. Well, let's hear from the man who did win the straw poll at this weekend's Values Voters Summit, Mitt Romney. Here's an interview that he gave with Bob Sheeper of CBS News on the issue of his faith.
And good morning again. Surveys show that nearly one American in five is a white evangelical Christian, and almost 60% of those are Republicans. So when a conservative evangelical group gathered here this weekend, Republican presidential candidates trooped in, hoping to win the group's straw poll. Rudy Giuliani stressed his belief in God. Fred Thompson promised his first act as president would be to pray for guidance. John McCain talked about being a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who is also a Baptist minister, stressed values over politics. But it was former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, a Mormon, who narrowly edged Huckabee to win the straw poll. Romney's people called it a big boost, and for sure it was a surprise, because many evangelicals have raised questions about the Mormon doctrines. We caught up with Romney at the conference, and in his most candid interview yet on his faith, he talked about that and much more. Governor, thank you for joining us. You've come to Washington to try and win the votes of these conservative Christian evangelicals. In light of that, is it fair to ask you about your faith? I mean, I'm wondering, how much about his faith do you think a candidate is obligated to share with voters?
You can ask anything you'd like. I don't feel bad at all about people asking me about my faith. I think it's natural. Most people don't know very much about it, and so if they want to ask questions, I'm happy to respond. If they have questions about the doctrines of my church, I typically direct them to the church because they could probably do a better job explaining than I can. But in terms of my values, what I think about the future of the country, how my faith impacts my thoughts about important issues, then I'm of course open to all those topics.
Well, let me just, for example, rightly or wrongly, a Newsweek poll says that 28% of the people they polled said they would not vote for a Mormon. Now, I know your staff has said that's irrelevant because they should be asked would they vote for you. but do you feel compelled to explain your religion or your relationship to it, or is that something that ought to be out of bounds?
No, I'm happy to have people ask questions. That doesn't bother me. And I think the reason that some 28-29% are not comfortable voting for a Mormon is they think they're voting for Harry Reid. But that's not the case. I think as people say, would you vote for Mitt Romney? And they get to know me and my wife and my family. They realize that our values are as American as any values you'll find in the country. And they're comfortable with us. There'll be some who don't come on board. But by and large, people will make their decision not based on where you go to church, but instead based upon your values, your vision for the country, and your ability to actually help the country at a time of great need.
Well, will you ever make a speech like Jack Kennedy did back in 1960 when Catholicism was an issue for a lot of people? Would you ever make a speech outlining how you feel about your religion and the part it plays in your life, or
Well, I sort of get a chance almost every day to add one or two things to that speech. I probably could never do something that would compare to what John F. Kennedy did. His was a masterpiece in American political history. Maybe there's a time when I talk mostly about religion, although I don't know. At this stage, I'm getting good support across the country. People want to know a bit about my faith. They learn a bit about it, and they say, okay, well, that's fine. Now, what do you think about the jihad? What do you think about being competitive with China? How can you fix your schools? What do you do about health care? And those issues overtake any differences with regards to religion they might see. But maybe down the road there'll be a speech. Just haven't made a final decision on that.
Well, I would just think, for example, there are many different people who call themselves Christians. I consider myself a Christian. But I don't necessarily believe or take every line in the Bible literally. Other Christians do. Do you take literally the teachings of your church?
I do. I'm not going to try and distance myself in any way, shape, or form from my faith. It was the faith of my fathers, of my sons, long tradition in my family. I'm, as I say, true blue through and through.
That's Mitt Romney talking about his faith. Now, look, did you hear him say anything like that 6 months ago, 3 months ago, 2 months ago? He's obviously decided that he's going to talk openly about this, and in answer to the question, are you willing to back away or kind of play fast and loose with anything that your church teaches? No, without qualification. Without qualification, not willing to play fast and loose with it. He's true blue through and through, and he's talking about being a Mormon. Now, you got to hand it to him, in spite of what you may think about voting for a Mormon for president, now he's being honest, now he's not sidestepping any of these issues. Does it concern you that he's true blue through and through as a Latter-day Saint? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. Back to CBS News, Bob Schieffer and Mitt Romney.
And so I accept the teachings of our church, and I do my best to live by those teachings. It hasn't made me perfect. I'm far from that. But I'm probably a better person than I would have been, and my kids are better than they would have been without faith. And, I don't try and be critical of other people's faiths. Actually, I'm of the view that religious individuals have an enormous advantage in stability in their life, and I respect the work that's being done by ministers of all faiths. I think it draws people closer to God and makes us better people.
Well, I remember during one of the Republican debates, people were asked, the various candidates, did they believe in evolution? And I believe you said that you did.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's very consistent with me to believe that there is a God and a creator, but that he might use the tools of science as we're learning them to help create the human body. Now, I don't think he created the human spirit or soul that way, but I think that's something that comes from God. Our body is something which I think science will hope to find, and I don't argue with science. I believe there's no conflict between true religion and true science, and we got a lot to learn. There's so much we don't know, probably both on the scientific front as well as on the front of theology.
Mm-hmm. I'm told that the Mormons teach that the Garden of Eden was in Missouri. Is that correct?
You know, they're probably the right folks to give you the answers to questions related to much of Mormon teachings. So I'll probably let them respond to questions about specific doctrines.
Interesting. Now, you need to bear in mind that Mitt Romney isn't just your run-of-the-mill kind of walking about on the street Mormon. First of all, his family history is long and very storied in the Mormon church, and he comes from one of the most powerful Mormon families in Mormon history in the United States. Very highly placed ancestors in the Mormon church. I don't know the specifics, although I did at one time, but it sticks with me that his father and his grandfather, both very influential Mormons. Okay, laying that aside, when he's asked specific about is the Garden of Eden, was that location in Missouri as is taught by the Mormon church, he demurs to those who know more about Mormon theology than he does. He knows the answer to that question. He's a Temple Mormon. What did he say? True blue through and through. Not willing to step away from any of his church's teachings, although not willing to answer specific questions about the things that might make it sound a little off the beaten path, like the Garden of Eden is. Where do they think? Independence, Missouri? Is that? I've been to Independence. I know Jeff goes out there occasionally to spend time with family, and it doesn't look like the Garden of Eden to me. Of course, neither does Lower Mesopotamia at this point. But it's interesting he would defer to the church teachers to answer those particular questions about the church's teaching, which is a way of saying, look, I'm not going to answer that question. Believes in evolution, got no problem with evolution. God creating via evolution, that would make him, I guess, a theistic, what would they call that? Theistic evolution. God evolved everything rather than God created everything, except the human spirit. Now, if you don't know anything about Mormonism, you might say, why not the human spirit? I mean, if the human body evolved over time and God used evolution to evolve the human body, why didn't God use evolution to evolve the human spirit? Well, it's because Mormon teaching says that we were spirit, eternal spirit beings, not eternal in this sense of eternal going back in time, that we were birthed by our God and his consorts, his wives, in the celestial realm, and existed as spirit beings before we were given a body. So he can hardly think. But this is what I want to know from Mormon teaching. In Mormon teaching, this God, the Mormon God that the Mormons worship on this planet, created this planet. But what about when this God was just a man created by another God? Was that evolution too? It's a complicated question, all these Mormon theology questions. Back to the Bob Schieffer interview with Mitt Romney.
But what I can tell you is that the values of my faith are founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And the same kind of philosophy that's associated with other Christian faiths, the Jewish faith and others, is very much consistent with ours. The view that there is a God that created us, that all the children on earth are of the same, if you will, divine origin, that the loss of one life anywhere is the loss of a fellow son or daughter of God, that liberty is a gift of God. These fundamental principles are the same faith to faith.
Bob Jones, who heads Bob Jones University down in South Carolina, recently endorsed you, and he said this week that he is completely opposed to the doctrines of Mormonism, but he said he preferred your erroneous faith to Hillary Rodham Clinton's lack of religion.
Isn't that
a
great line?
Do you accept that endorsement?
Oh, I'm happy to receive endorsements from individuals, and of course, we have different faiths. I'm not expecting him to endorse my faith. I'm not asking anyone to do that. I'm asking him to look at me as an American and judge my values, learn about me and my family, my character, and decide whether I could help America at a critical time. And I'm pleased that you have a evangelical Christian leader who says, look, Mitt Romney's a guy who is a social conservative, an economic conservative, a foreign policy conservative. Those three branches, if you will, of conservatism have to be united if we're going to win the White House. And so his endorsement is good news to me. But I don't endorse, I don't expect him to endorse my religion.
But why do you think that a lot of evangelical Christians do have a problem with you and with your religion?
Well, religions are different, and in some respects, our faith has a different take on various religious issues than do other faiths, and so in the competition, if you will, of religion and what's a true doctrine and what's not, there'll be a lot of contrast between the different faiths of the world. But when it comes to the values of our faith, it was with Jerry Falwell before he passed away, and he said, look, when we were fighting to stop gay marriage, he said, I got together with the Mormons in California and the leadership of your church, and we fought to try and stop gay marriage because on a value basis, we come from the same place. And I think that's going to be true for people who take a good look at me. They're not going to accept my religion necessarily, but they will certainly see me as someone who can be one of those who could carry the standard of conservatives for social social issues.
Would you just, I think back to the speech that Kennedy made, and people were worried about that somehow or another he might take the orders from the Pope.
Oh.
How would you describe your relationship to the church and how you would see the responsibilities and duties of the president?
Well, no president could possibly take orders or even input from a religious leader telling him what to do. I mean, okay, I guess you can always listen to ideas, but you certainly wouldn't be guided by someone outside the constitutional circle, if you will. And I subscribe to something Abraham Lincoln spoke about when he was a young man. He said, you take the oath of office and you subscribe to America's political religion. And that is, you take the oath of office and the rule of law as your primary promise to God. And that's the way I feel. My church wouldn't endeavor to tell me what to do on an issue, and I wouldn't listen to them on an issue that related to our nation. If I'm president of the United States and put my hand on the Bible, I do what the Constitution tells me, what the rule of law tells me. I certainly don't do what a leader of my church or any other tells me to do.
I wonder, is he going to put his hand on the Bible or on the Bible in the Book of Mormon and the Pearl of Great Price? I imagine it will be a Bible. Of course, I'm terrible at predicting these kind of things. We'll pick this up tomorrow, by the way. We've got more audio from Mitt Romney, not only on this issue, but also on his pro-life switch and his views on gay marriage. I got a question for you. I want you to ponder it overnight and give me a call tomorrow when we pick up this subject. What Mormon teachings can you think of that could influence Romney's possible actions as a possible future president? Picture Mitt Romney putting his hand on the Bible and taking office in January of 2009. Okay, picture that, and then ask yourself the question, although since he has said that he's true blue through and through Mormon, not really willing to get into the particulars of his faith, but he believes it, and he believes it completely, what teachings of Mormonism could influence his actions as president? Think about it. Give me a call tomorrow when we pick up this subject again. He said something in the midst of that interview that probably was the smartest thing that he's ever said vis-a-vis his faith. Probably should make this part of his slogan, his standard answer to questions about Mormonism. He said, "I'm not asking anyone to endorse my faith." Because he got the endorsement from Bob Jones, who clearly said, "I'm not endorsing his faith, but I like his values. Here's my endorsement." Maybe what Mitt Romney should start saying as his new answer to, "Hey, Mitt, what's the deal with being a Mormon?" Just say, "I'm not asking anyone to endorse my faith." Because he's right in pointing out that, generally speaking, American voters don't feel like they're endorsing someone's faith, whatever it may be, when they elect them. Might be a smart idea. Issues Etc. has been brought to you in part today by Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. This is an organization doing great work around the world, providing relief to the AIDS crisis in Africa, to victims of tsunamis and earthquakes, to victims of Hurricane Katrina here in the States. Find out more about LCMS World Relief at our homepage tonight, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Look for Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief, or give them a call, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. Tomorrow on the program, we'll pick up the subject of Mitt Romney and his view of life. Has his recent change from pro-choice to pro-life, has it been cemented enough in your mind to vote for him as a pro-life Republican, should you have the opportunity? And think about that question. What among his Mormon teachings, if he were to take the White House, would affect his activities as president? It's a question for you tomorrow on the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.